possible. Kate is watching all this, her back pressed up against the wall, dumbfounded. Still, she manages to keep her freshly painted fingers and toes carefully spread.
Amelia, make sure everything in the stand is neat and orderly, okay? And that the girls look like they're working hard.
They are working hard, Kate says incredulously. We always are. Amelia guides her out, grabbing the mason jar of now dead flowers on the way and mashing them down into an overflowing trash can. Just hurry, I'll explain. Glancing around the main area of the stand, she sees that the service windows are both smudgy. She lunges for a bottle of Windex and her feet nearly slip out from under her. There are sprinkles all over the floor, she says, disappointed. When was the last time someone swept in here?
Seriously? Kate howls. It's the middle of a shift, and I'm on my break. Also, I'm not the boss here, she says, pointing to Amelia's flower pin. You are.
Jen and Bernadette, the two other girls on this shift, are frozen.
It's okay. Everything's fine.
Amelia tries to reassure them while simultaneously straightening up and wiping, a tornado of stress.
But Kate and I are going to take over the windows for a little while. Jen, can you please go empty the trash cans and sweep up these sprinkles and...
She glances behind her.
Bern, I know we're okay on waffle cones right now, but could you get some more cooking anyway to get the place smelling yummy?
She takes a deep breath.
And please make sure all of you have your shirts tucked in, she adds, taking her own advice.
Who the hell is coming? Kate says, doing the same.
The president?
Amelia combs her fingers through her hair and glances out the window.
Grady's dad is on his way here, she announces. So, everyone, please.
Amelia blanks on how to end her sentence, because what is she asking them, really?
Be on your best behavior.
Not a minute later, a black Mercedes pulls into the stand's driveway.
Grady, she calls out. He's here.
Grady pops up beside her and peeks discreetly over her shoulder.
Okay, I'm going outside.
The next few customers Amelia helps, she feels like she's drunk. She has so much adrenaline coursing through her veins. As she hands over a double scoop cone, she catches a glimpse of Grady greeting his dad out of the corner of her eye. Grady extends his hand for a shake, and his dad obliges.
How was your vacation?
Grady asks breezily as he leads his dad inside.
Courses were beautiful. I shot very well.
Grady's dad surveys the place down the tip of his nose.
You've been busy.
I can't believe you came all the way here to surprise me, Grady says, his energy 180 degrees off from where he was a few minutes ago.
I think you can understand why I felt compelled not to take your word for how well things are going.
Grady's cheeks burn.
Well, I'm glad you're here. I'm excited to show this place off.
Except Grady does the opposite. He ushers his dad into the office and closes the door. Grady's dad is intense, Kate whispers. Amelia whispers back. He's here to spy on him to make sure things are going well.
Then you'd better make sure he doesn't open our walk-in freezer.
Frowning, Amelia walks over and puts on the purple jacket. Maybe two drums of each flavor are left.
Kate, why didn't you tell me we were so low?
She grabs the clipboard to see, but no one has been filling out the stock sheet.
Because I didn't want to upset you. And don't even say anything about the clipboard, okay? It's painfully obvious what we have left.
Grady calls out,
Amelia, can you bring my dad a scoop of each flavor?
Coming!
Coming! Kate sing-songs, mocking her. You sound like his secretary.
I do not, Amelia says, knowing she does.
Amelia makes four junior-sized cups, careful that each flavor is a full, round, beautiful scoop. She stands at the office door, ready to enter, but there's a conversation in progress. She presses her ear to the door.
What's it like up in the house?
Grady's dad asks. Hot, Grady says with a jovial laugh. But I can take it.
And the girls aren't distracting you too much?
No, no, Grady says. They stay down here. And I'm up at the farmhouse, working basically 24/7.
Amelia frowns. That's not entirely true, Grady.
I worried this was going to be a party for you.
Oh, anything but. Between my online classes and running the business, I don't have time for any distractions.
And how are they taking to having a man in charge?
There have been some growing pains, Grady says with a laugh. But they know who's boss.
Amelia shakes her head. What the heck does that mean?
After a pause, Grady says, Sorry, Dad, I don't know what's taking her so long with your ice cream.
Hey, Amelia!
Amelia nudges the door open with her foot. Here you go, Mr. Mead, she says. Grady's dad nods and then leans back as if she were an inconvenient waitress to allow her the room to place them on the desk in front of him.
Frankly, Grady, you're doing better than I expected.
Thanks, Dad.
But now you need to be asking yourself how you can take things to the next level. I want you thinking big.
How do you mean?
Like your email about raising prices. Your spreadsheet was solid, but you missed opportunities, like, say, shrinking your scoop size.
He peers into the cups Amelia arranges before him, and then up at her with a pressed smile.
How many ounces is this, dear?
She bristles.
4.
See? Go down to 3. You'll get however many more scoops per 3-gallon drum at a higher price.
So, give them less and charge more?
Every muscle inside Amelia clenches tight. Is he serious? She really, really hopes he is not serious. Grady's dad clears his throat and his eyes roll from Grady over to Amelia.
Did you need something, Amelia?
Grady asks her.
No.
Then would you mind closing the door on your way out?
Stunned, Amelia nods obediently and backs out. Grady's dad barely notices her. He doesn't say thank you, and he doesn't take a taste. Instead, he leans back and says,
I have a buddy who's done some franchising in Chicago. I'll give him a call.
Are you going to try the ice cream? It's really good, Dad. That flavor was Mom's favorite.
Actually, I could really go for a coffee. Can you call that girl back in here?
That girl?
Amelia?
Grady calls out. Kate puts her hands on Amelia's shoulders. Amelia hadn't known she was standing there.
Please, Kate says, raring to go.
Let me.
Kate, don't.
Don't worry. I'm not going to ruin anything.
Hey, Amelia!
Grady calls louder. Amelia positions herself behind the office door where she can peek in without being seen.
Amelia's taking care of something, Kate says, entering the office. Can I help you?
Oh, Grady is standing at their coffee maker. Sorry, I couldn't find any coffee.
That's because none of us drink coffee, Kate says. She smiles sweetly at Grady's dad. Can I make you a cup of tea instead?
He doesn't look up from the spreadsheet he's holding.
Yeah, okay.
Kate runs hot water through the coffee maker while Grady's dad flips through some more of the ledgers.
Mind if I take some of these with me? I'd like to look them over.
No, not at all.
Here's your tea, Kate says, delivering a cup. Grady's dad takes a sip.
What is this?
An herbal blend.
It's good,
he says, surprised, taking a second, deeper sip.
Have some,
he tells Grady.
Do you want a cup? Kate asks Grady.
Amelia can hardly keep from laughing behind the door. Grady and his dad are sipping on PMS tea. It's late when Amelia hears Grady open the front door of the farmhouse. almost closing time. She knows he left the stand with his dad not long after she went up to the house. Kate texted her to say that the two of them had climbed into Grady's dad's Mercedes and roared off. That was hours ago. The day has been on rewind in her head. She's been replaying how Grady and his dad treated her. Grady's dismissive tone, his father's condescending attitude, calling her dear. Grady didn't even bother to introduce her or single her out in any way. And as head girl, she feels like a total failure for not standing up for herself. She's supposed to be a role model? Thank God for Kate's PMST clapback. She ends up making a pretty great batch of chocolate. Not as good as Molly Mead's, but pretty darn good. Could they sell this? Absolutely. But she doesn't feel happy. She feels humiliated. Amelia hears Grady kick off his shoes, the floorboards of the hallway creak under his feet. The basement door opens and Grady trudges down the steps. She doesn't say anything to him. No hello. No how was dinner. Not that he notices. Grady falls onto the couch like dead weight.
Well, that was completely exhausting. I swear nothing is good enough for him. It's like I think I figured out how to make him proud, but then he immediately ups and moves the goalpost.
He adjusts a pillow so it's behind his head.
He never asks for my ideas. He never wants to hear what I think. The whole night was just him going on and on about all the things I should be doing with Mead Creamery. Bigger brand presence, adding revenue streams, sell the milk bottles, sell the polo shirts.
What?
Oh, yeah. He wants me to start selling your Mead Creamery polos for $25 a piece.
Amelia drums her fingers in frustration. Only Mead Creamery girls get pink polo shirts. They aren't nearly as special if everyone can buy one. And what did you say?
I didn't say anything. He doesn't want me to say anything. He just wants me to do it.
She spins toward him. What about his idea for using smaller scoops and charging customers more?
I don't love the idea, but it would buy us more time.
Grady stretches, letting one long leg go to the floor.
You said you're close, right? I have faith in you.
Amelia rolls her eyes.
What's that about?
He says, drawing a circle in the air with his finger. Nothing.
Come on, say it.
Her hands go to her hips. How come you didn't even introduce me to your dad? I've been busting my butt to help you. You treated me like your secretary, when I'm head girl. He quickly sits up.
Wait, Amelia, hold on a second. If it's not already obvious, I have a very weird relationship with my dad.
No, that's clear, Grady. Super clear.
I promise I didn't slight you on purpose.
But you also made it seem like you're the one doing everything. She's embarrassed saying this, because it's not like any of this is hers. She's a secondary character, background in the Mead family saga.
I can't have him thinking I'm not good at this.
He's going to have that impression when you run out of ice cream, she points out, which is going to happen very soon.
I'm hoping we figure it out before I have to tell him.
You mean you hope I'll figure it out?
Hold up. I was fine to keep trying. You're the one who volunteered to give making ice cream a shot, and I didn't stop you because it seemed like you enjoyed doing it. And to be completely honest, it's been fun to watch you.
Amelia doesn't let herself soften. I do enjoy it.
So what's the problem?
Amelia doesn't like how this is getting muddled. I don't want you selling our uniforms. Make different shirts if you want to, but don't sell these.
Fine, Amelia. We won't sell the polos. And I won't raise the prices, and I won't use smaller scoops. I definitely don't want to make you upset.
Kate texts her. Ready? I'm not upset, she tells him, hooking her bag on her shoulder.
You are.
and I'm sorry if that's my fault.
I'd rather you didn't apologize, honestly. It's business, right? Nothing personal.
Grady lies back down and covers his face with the pillow. It looks like he might want to stay that way forever.
That was the idea, he says, muffled. But I'll make an exception for you. Please, just stay.
Amelia's heart races. This is the most overtly flirty thing he's said to her. Something much harder to ignore, play off, look away from. Unless he's saying it because of the ice cream? Part of Amelia wants to know. A bigger part than she'd like to admit.
But Kate is the most important thing in her life. Not Grady, not ice cream, not Mead Creamery. And on top of all that, she made a promise. So even though she wants to stay, she goes. And if anyone would understand that, Molly would.
Chapter 25. Amelia is at the sink, draining a pot of slippery elbows from a late-night box of too-late-for-anything-else mac and cheese for her and Kate. Kate had to stop for gas if they were going to make it home from the stand, and while she filled up, Amelia ran into the mini-mart for snacks. Luckily, they had the good kind for sale, where the cheese isn't powdered. Instead, it's a creamy sauce that comes in a foil packet, which gets mixed in once the noodles are cooked. Amelia squeezes and rolls the foil, working dutifully to get every last drop out.
You know what sucks? Kate says, digging in the fridge for hot sauce. They both like to douse enough hot sauce on their mac and cheese to make their eyes water.
Amelia steels herself. She doesn't really want to talk about what happened at the stand today with Grady. She mentioned on the ride home that Grady apologized, but Kate seems less convinced of his sincerity than Amelia.
Amelia?
Sorry. What?
It sucks that Sand Lake doesn't do their own fireworks show anymore for the 4th.
Kate grabs utensils and sets two places at Amelia's kitchen table.
Remember that?
Totally. It used to be my favorite holiday.
The town used to set off fireworks from a barge in the center of the lake when they were kids. After dinner, everyone in town would walk down with picnic baskets, blankets, beach chairs, and coolers and wait for the sun to set.
Amelia loved the way the lights twinkled in the sky and also on the water, a perfect mirror image. And the peppy songs the high school marching band would play from the parking lot. She isn't especially patriotic, but there was something about the way they matched the beat to the bursts that would make her feel a swell of pride.
Anyway, the girls were talking today about their plans for the 4th, and I was remembering the fireworks, and they looked at me like I was crazy. None of them remember going.
Kate shakes some hot sauce into both of their bowls, looks up at Amelia, who gives her a nod of encouragement.
Did we ever go together? Kate asks, adding in a bit more.
Nope, it ended when we were in 6th grade.
Kate stirs her bowl. Ah, 6th grade BCA, before Kate and Amelia. I wonder why the town stopped doing them.
I think because more and more people ditched Sand Lake for the better fireworks shows at the other lakes.
It was true. Their fireworks show was never as impressive as at some of the other nearby towns, where they actually charged people money. But it was a mostly steady stream for around 15 minutes, explosions loud enough that Amelia would plug her ears.
What do you think about doing our own fireworks show at the lake this year? For the girls?
Oh my God, that would be so fun!
But Amelia's smile wilts as fast as it has bloomed. I'm not even sure we'll have ice cream to sell in 2 days. Kate gently asks,
Has Grady said what he's going to do when we run out?
No, I don't think there's anything he can do. I mean, we've searched the farmhouse top to bottom. Molly's recipes aren't there. I think he's just hoping I'll figure out how to make ice cream that's good enough to sell.
Kate slowly lowers her fork to the table. But
Even if you manage to churn out some truly terrific ice cream on your own, it's not going to be Molly's ice cream. Customers aren't going to taste what's good about yours, only what's different. And they're going to be disappointed.
Shoot, I never thought about it like that before.
Amelia remembers the man she served on opening day in the pork pie hat, how his eyes rolled back in his head with just one lick of his cone. How would his face have looked if he'd tried the ice cream Amelia made?
I worry about the girls, too, Kate admits. This summer's been one big bummer for them. That's another reason why I think you should start channeling your energy into making the 4th of July night super fun.
Amelia slumps back in her chair. So what should I do? Totally give up on making ice cream?
If she abandons Grady, won't that be dooming them all?
Kate makes her preference known.
You've tried your best to save Mead Creamery, but I think now it's time to come back down to the stand. When the ship finally sinks, I think you'll regret not being on it with us.
Chapter 26. That night, Amelia is tortured by dreams of ice cream, like a sugar-starved kid. But only during the few minutes she manages to fall asleep. Mostly, she is wide awake, tossing and turning in her bed, kicking at the sheets. She does not ride her bike to the farmhouse the next morning. Instead, she drives with Kate to the lake. They aren't on the schedule today until second shift, leaving them a few sunny hours to tan and swim. Kate is already enviably bronze. Amelia sprays herself with extra coconut oil, hoping to catch up. From their towels, plans for their 4th of July party begin to take shape. There was never a fourth party before, which seems like a startling error in retrospect, and Amelia suspects it could potentially become a new summer tradition, if Mead Creamery somehow survives. Amelia types up a shopping list on her phone, food and fireworks, basically, and then she and Kate brainstorm a rough itinerary for the night. They'll start with a bonfire beach cookout, hot dogs wrapped in crescent roll dough, then roasted on sticks, ears of corn smoked in their husks, gooey, perfectly half-burnt s'mores. Once the sun begins to set, they'll hold a bunch of contests, prizes, TBD, for things like the best interpretive dance using sparklers. And then the night will end with Amelia and Kate rowing a canoe to the middle of Sand Lake and setting off as many fireworks as they can afford to buy for the girls on shore. The whole morning, Amelia keeps expecting to hear from Grady. A text, or maybe even a call. Isn't he curious why she isn't there like usual? Isn't he wondering where she's at with the ice cream? Maybe he knows she needs a break. Or maybe he's accepted that it's a lost cause. When Amelia gets to the stand for her shift, she stays down at the stand and tries her best to pretend things are normal. She sings along to the oldies on the radio. She takes the lead on all newbie chores to give the other girls a break. It feels good to be back with them, and the girls are excited about the 4th of July plans. But Amelia isn't able to lose herself the way she used to. She can't forget that the stand is in trouble, and it hurts her heart. But Kate is so clearly happy to have her back, signaling in 100 small gestures, hip checks, hugs, ponytail swats, that Amelia's made the right choice. At the end of the night, and without a word from Grady, she stoically brings the receipts and deposits up to the farmhouse. Deep inside, she's hoping to see him, hoping he'll invite her in. Grady has the lights off. On July 2nd, Home Sweet Home sells out. On July 3rd, chocolate. On July 4th, Amelia takes the final drums of vanilla and strawberry out of the storage freezer and moves them into the scooping cabinet. The stand is only open for the first shift on the holiday. If it were a full day, they wouldn't make it to closing. It's become so depressing. Amelia avoids working the windows. It wounds her when customers order flavors they don't have. Their O's of disappointment feel like arrows shot into her heart, a constant reminder of how Amelia felt the day Molly Mead died, thinking she'd never get a taste of home sweet home again. The girls offer vague excuses about problems with production, promises that they're trying to get things fixed. They offer free toppings. Amelia doesn't want them to lie, just apologize. But what does it matter at this point? To that end, Amelia wants tonight to be epic. Nervous that they don't have enough fireworks, Amelia sends Kate back to the vendor tent that sprouted up in the Walmart parking lot with a whole week's salary. Kate's only supposed to be gone 30 minutes, but it gets to be almost 2 hours. Amelia wonders if Kate stopped in to say hey to the people at Jump Zone. Maybe she's trying to get her old job back. After Amelia closes up and sends Sophie and Jen home, she changes out of her uniform and into the festive clothes she's brought with her, a blue and white striped tank, cherry red shorts that tie in the front in a bow, and a pair of espadrille wedges. Amelia and Kate have planned to head to the lake straight from work to begin setting things up on the beach. The other girls will join them around 6. "Where are you?" Amelia texts Kate. "Sorry, I ducked into Walmart to get bug spray, but the lines are crazy. Be back to the stand soon." Amelia walks up to the farmhouse to hand Grady the deposit. They still haven't spoken. After putting the bank bag in the mailbox, she turns to walk away. But then she whips back and rings the doorbell, intending to inform Grady about the ice cream. How there isn't any more left. How it's really, truly over. When he doesn't answer, she presses the doorbell again and again and again. She feels tricked by him. Grady swept her up into his frenzy, sucked her into his family drama. All that time they spent together, those risky, flirty moments. She sacrificed her summer and her relationships to help save something she thought was as important to him as it was to her. Molly Mead wouldn't have wanted that. Grady doesn't answer, even though the pink Cadillac is there. Could he be in the basement trying to make ice cream? If he was, would she forgive him for ghosting her? The house is unlocked. Amelia slips inside. But the basement is quiet. It hasn't been touched. He's not in the living room, not up on the second floor. Amelia hears Moo mewing and follows the sound into Molly's office. Moo is sitting on the desk chair, contentedly scratching at the wooden armrest. On her way out, Amelia notices that the letters from Grady's mother are no longer on the mantle. Her heart catches, remembering that sad look in his eyes. Did he finally read them? No. Grady hasn't touched them. He's only moved them over to the pile of papers that he's destined for the shredder. Actually, they'd probably be shredded by now if he hadn't jammed the thing. The anger simmers inside her. Why wouldn't he want to read them? Amelia's not sure why she herself is drawn to them. Maybe she can't bear the legacy of another dead woman disappearing, of Grady's mother's words thrown away by her one and only son. She picks up the bundle and unties the string around them. She's somehow made a habit of reading things she has no business reading, it seems. Most of them are letters, and there are a couple of greeting cards, too. A birthday card to Molly, a Christmas card with a school picture of Grady inside. He's wearing an annoyingly cute little sweater vest, reindeer leaping across the red wool. Then Amelia comes across an envelope that feels thicker than the rest. Amelia opens it up. It's an ornate thank you card, silver foil with a white ribbon bow affixed to the front. Inside, there's a picture of Grady's parents and Molly Mead standing in a posh reception hall. Grady's dad looks so happy and young, almost like Grady, only with slightly curlier, puffier hair. He might be only a few years older here than Grady is now, she thinks. There's something boyishly earnest about his smile. And Grady's mom, elegant in a white lace dress. Molly looks beautiful, too. Her hair isn't white, it's still somewhat reddish. She's stylish, in a gold tweed dress with bell sleeves, a rose-colored silk bag. In the picture, she's squeezing Grady's mom's hand, and she looks happy in a way that Amelia wouldn't have expected. There's not a trace of sadness for her own doomed romance to be found. Dear Molly, according to current wedding etiquette, couples have 1 year from the date of their nuptials to send thank you cards. I'm embarrassed it's taken the full year to write this note, especially when your present was far and away my favorite of all the gifts we received. Molly, I'm honored that you would share your recipes with me, and that vintage ice cream maker is a work of art. Is it your original? One upside to this card coming so late, I can share the news that I am expecting. The ice cream is coming in very handy in that regard, and being pregnant is the perfect excuse to have a scoop of home sweet home each day. It was lovely to get to talk to you at the reception, albeit briefly. I will check with Pat's secretary and find a time for us to visit this fall before the baby comes. Love, Diana Denton Mead. Amelia gasps and calls out for Brady, but there is no answer, only the quiet of the old farmhouse. She runs into Molly's bedroom and checks the window that looks out on the back acreage. She sees him, quite a ways off, out for a run, rising and falling in a steady rhythm along a path in the back fields, moving farther and farther away from her. She tries his cell, but it goes straight to voicemail, his cool professional voice instructing her to leave a message. Instead, she flies down the steps. How to run in wedges is another thing Amelia picked up from stand girls, and out the front door. She hops on her bike and stands on her pedals to get around the farmhouse and into the fields as quickly as possible. The farther away from the house she gets, the louder the sounds of nature get, the buzzing of insects, the breeze in the grass. She zooms past a large concrete pad, all that's left of the burned-down barn. Grady! Grady! She shouts, coming up behind him. He has his music on, but he must eventually hear her because he turns and glances over his shoulder and promptly stumbles and falls to the ground. Jesus, Amelia! You almost gave me a heart attack! As he picks himself up, she sets down her feet and tries pushing the card into his hand. It takes him a second to realize what it is. I can't believe you were going to throw your mom's letters away.
I already read through them.
Grady, I know you're lying. Grimacing, he checks his elbow. It's scraped raw and bleeding.
Can you please not look at me like you hate me?
I don't hate you, but please, you have to read this. She presses the card into his hands. Molly gave your mom the ice cream recipes. They were her wedding present to your parents. Grady clenches his jaw. He rips out his earbuds, flings them over his shoulder, and begrudgingly takes the card from Amelia. Her heart is pounding. Do you remember seeing this ice cream maker around? Maybe in your kitchen? His eyes run back and forth, back and forth.
No.
Your mom wrote that the recipes were very special to her. You don't think your dad would have kept them? Grady chews the inside of his cheek. He seems to be rehearsing what he's about to say before he says it.
Right after my mom died, Dad moved her things into storage. They're at our beach house in Dooley. I have no clue what he saved.
Dooley? That's like, what, 2 hours away from here? You could leave now!
Amelia, you just called me out for not reading my mom's letters, so what makes you think I'm going to want to dig through her things?
I don't understand. Your mom loved this place, and Molly Mead loved you enough to leave it to you. Don't you feel an obligation to them both to see this through till the end? Rubbing his hand over his face, Grady says,
Molly didn't leave the sand to me. She left it to my mom, and I guess she never updated her will. I only inherited it because all my mom's assets come to me. It's a technicality.
You think Molly didn't know it would work that way? Amelia shakes her head. Technicality or not, it's yours now.
Don't you get it? Knowing how important this place was to my mom only makes this harder. It's one thing not to please my dad. I don't know if I ever will, and I'm starting to think I shouldn't even try. But I can't let down my mom. Not any more than I already have.
Grady, you have to go and see if you can find them.
His eyes drop to the ground, where he kicks at the dirt. Amelia holds her breath until he looks up at her, eyes hopeful and needy, his hands twisting his headphone wires.
Will you come with me?
Grady, I can't.
Please, Amelia. I don't mean to ask any more of you. That's why I haven't chased you down. This is my problem, not yours, and you've already gone above and beyond. But I honestly don't think I can go through her stuff myself. I'll show you where everything is. You can go through the boxes, see if you find them.
I have plans tonight that I absolutely can't miss, Amelia says, though she suspects that if she gave Grady a night to sleep on this, he'd very likely change his mind. What time can we get back?
2 hours there, an hour to search through her stuff, and then 2 hours back. So, around 10?
Amelia would miss the dinner, miss the interpretive sparkler dance contest, but she'd be back in time for fireworks. Can you be ready to go in 10 minutes?
Yes, absolutely.
You have to drive like the wind. A safe wind, but the wind.
Promise.
They run back to the house together. Grady jumps into the shower and makes sure Moo has fresh food and water, while Amelia heads down to the stand to see Kate.
She's never been more nervous in her life. Kate has her fireworks haul spread out on the head girl's desk.
This was a great call, Amelia. You look so cute, by the way. Kate, I need to talk to you about tonight.
What? Did something happen?
Amelia takes a deep breath. I found Molly's recipes. Or, I think I did. The thing is, we have to go to Grady's dad's beach house to get them. It's not far, it's only over in Dooley. We're going to leave right now.
You and Grady.
I'll be back in time for fireworks.
Amelia, I cannot believe you'd...
Wait, is something going on between you two?
Amelia shakes her head quickly.
No,
because we all said, Kate, nothing is going on between me and Grady, I swear.
Then why can't you just go tomorrow?
Kate's lips press together in a thin line.
Why do you have to go at all?
Amelia hasn't told Kate anything about Grady's real mom. She would like to, but now is not the time. She doesn't have any time.
I don't want to have any regrets.
You'll regret missing tonight, Kate warns. Or maybe it's a threat.
I won't miss tonight. I'll be back, Amelia stresses again. Save me a hot dog, okay?
Kate's gaze flicks upward. Amelia rushes forward and hugs her best friend goodbye, and she can feel Kate's disappointment. It almost makes her stay. Almost.
Chapter 27. They pass through city, into country, into city, into country again before they make it to the coast, windows open, radio on low. Every few minutes a car passes them on the highway and the driver honks and waves.
Note to self, Grady says. If you ever have to go someplace incognito, do not drive a pink Cadillac.
He looks toward Amelia for a laugh. The best she can manage is a weak smile.
You're regretting coming with me,
he deduces. Look, if it makes you feel any better, I'm regretting going.
Grady rings the steering wheel with his hands. Since leaving Sand Lake, he's only gotten more anxious, not less. Meanwhile, Amelia is trying her best to preserve what little professional distance remains between her and Grady. She sits up tall in her seat, keeps her hands folded in her lap, eyes on the road. Though she hasn't technically broken her promise to Kate and the other stand girls that Grady is off limits, she doubts a defense of her actions thus far would hold much water in the court of public opinion. Of course, she could say that everything she's done so far has been for the good of the stand, but even that rings a bit hollow.
You never talk about college. Where are you going again?
Gibbons.
That's right. Are you excited?
I guess, Amelia says. But I envy you and Kate, you both knowing exactly what you want to do with your life.
Well, I wouldn't say I had much of a choice. It was always assumed I'd be going to school to follow in my dad's footsteps.
Grady adds,
I'm incredibly lucky. It's like getting handed the keys to a corner office. The only thing I have to do is not screw it up.
Good thing you love it.
Right. Good thing.
Grady cracks his neck.
Have you registered for classes yet?
Not yet.
One good thing about being undeclared is that you can take all sorts of classes. My buddy Troy took a course about food culture across the Romance languages, and the class went out to a new restaurant twice a month. Oh, and Rob took a class called Poetry of the Songwriter, where they listened to music and analyzed the lyrics like poetry. He did his final on Pearl Jam.
What about you? What cool classes do the business majors get to take?
He laughs. Business school isn't meant to be fun.
Come on.
I'm not kidding. I take stats and econ, and that's basically it. All my classes are in these huge auditoriums. They're so big, the professors don't even bother taking attendance. You actually don't have to show up.
Seriously?
I personally wouldn't recommend not going.
He props his elbow up on the driver's side door.
I pretty much failed out last semester.
Are you serious? Amelia twists her body so she's facing him.
I had motivational issues, I guess. But so long as I pass all my online courses, which I'm on track to do, I won't be too far behind. Then all I have to worry about is my dad.
What do you mean? Grady flushes.
He's basically threatened not to pay my tuition for next semester.
Would he really do that?
He said his investment in me wasn't looking like a promising return.
Wow.
Yeah. So when the opportunity to run Mead Creamery presented itself, I jumped to take it on. I'm basically using it to prove myself to him so I can go back to school.
What if we don't find the recipes? What will you do then?
I don't know.
I'm sure he won't let you not go back to Truman. I mean, he's seen how hard you've been trying, right?
Like I said, my dad and I have a very weird relationship.
So why didn't you reach out when I didn't come back to the house to make ice cream these last few days?
I wanted to, but not because of the ice cream. I missed hanging out with you, Amelia. Plus, I was ashamed of the way I behaved when my dad came to visit.
He shakes his head and lets out a long exhale.
I'm realizing that I'm more like him than I thought.
Though Amelia isn't sure exactly what Grady means, she reaches out to touch him, comfort him, but then pulls her hand back at the last second. If Grady notices, he pretends not to. He keeps his eyes on the road.
We'll be there soon.
A little over 2 hours later, they arrive at a large iron gate anchored by a stately wall of tall hedges on either side.
Grady rolls down his window, leans out of the Cadillac, and punches a code into a sleek little box mounted on a metal pole. After a beep, the gate slowly swings open. Grady pulls forward and a thudding fills the car. They are no longer on a paved road. This one is cobblestone, and the pavers are beautifully laid, gray and white in a chevron pattern. They drive past a few smaller buildings, one or two cottages, and then a big garage with four barn-style doors. The driveway curves, and then reveals an enormous house in the distance. It is the biggest, most opulent house Amelia has ever seen.
This is your beach house?
Not mine, my dad's. And not for much longer. It's for sale,
Grady explains.
He bought a place in Palm Beach that's near to my stepmom's family 2 summers ago. He hardly comes here anymore.
As they climb the front steps, little motion sensor lights click on. There are beautiful succulent plants and window boxes bursting with vibrant petunias and dripping in sweet potato vines. They reach the front door, which is also oversized. Grady takes out his phone and taps some app, and it clicks open. As they walk in, the lights around them automatically turn on. He types a code into another small panel. Window shades roll up, exposing floor-to-ceiling two-story windows. Amelia slips off her espadrille wedges, leaving them by the door. It's a beautiful house, for sure, but it has about as much cozy feeling as a hotel lobby. It's ornate, well-decorated, but without a single homey touch. She follows Grady into the open kitchen, which has a huge island topped by marble, swirling blue like ocean water, and a dining table with 12 chairs crowned by a driftwood chandelier. Grady opens a cabinet door that camouflages a fridge. Inside, soda cans are lined up, and bottles of Snapple, too. There's also Gatorade, all orange, the flavor Grady drinks. There aren't any groceries, but below is a pull-out freezer full of frozen pizzas and burritos.
Are you hungry?
Amelia shakes her head no. She can't believe that the ice cream recipes might be here. This place is so unlike the Meads farmhouse in every way. She turns around and sees watercolor streaks of pinks and blues through the windows, the ocean shimmering, the caps of the waves dusted in the glitter of dusk. Grady pulls open a sliding glass door for her. The air is sticky and salty outside, thick and still hot despite it being evening. There's an outdoor shower and a hot tub and a wet bar, which they pass to get to the railing. Amelia focuses past the grassy dunes to the beach. No footprints on the sand, the lifeguard chair tipped over, an old man walking a small dog right where the waves break, and pipers poking their long, thin beaks into the wet sand. She has only ever been to the ocean once, down in Florida, visiting a cousin of her father's. The waves scared her off from going in deeper than her knees. Aside from that, every summer has been spent swimming in the smooth, still waters of Sand Lake.
Sometimes you can see dolphins out there, Grady says, pointing off toward the ocean.
Grady, this house...
I know.
Something tightens in his face.
My dad is really good at making money.
His eyes move slowly across the horizon, as if trying to capture something, a panoramic picture. Then he turns his back to the water.
Far less successful at being a dad, unfortunately.
He pushes himself off the railing and heads inside. It's okay, if you need more time.
No, I just want to get this over with.
He leads her back through the kitchen and then down a staircase. They pass a gym, a home theater.
Her stuff's in this room.
He takes a deep, shivery breath, and then he shakes out his arms and legs like an athlete psyching himself up for a race. He doesn't want to be here, doing this. Though she feels excited, hopeful that they are so close now, She wishes it wasn't coming at Grady's expense.
Chapter 28. The room is the only one Amelia has seen that has no furnishings. There are no beachy decorative accessories, like glass vases filled with alternating layers of sand and shells, or starfish cast in silver. No. The light is harsh, the walls lined with stacks of cardboard moving boxes, all the same size, four tall. Each one has a white sticker in the bottom left corner, the size of an index card, listing the contents. Printed out on a computer, not even handwritten. Grady approaches the stack nearest to him. It's as tall as he is. He presses his hand flat against the topmost box, as if he's searching inside it for a heartbeat. The sticker reads, "Clothes, semi-formal." The one below that, "Fiction, E through L-A." Below that, "Handbags, hosiery, scarves, socks." Below that, "Desk accessories, stationery." Then the floor. Amelia can see the redness creeping up his neck as he tells her,
"We've owned this place for 6 years. Before that, he had them in our old beach house, which is maybe a mile away from here."
Amelia struggles to make sense of this. Clearly, Grady's dad loved his mom. If he didn't, he would have thrown this stuff away years ago.
"Well, he took a lot of care in packing it up."
Grady turns away from her.
"He paid someone to do this. Probably one of his assistants."
Amelia says, "I'm sure it was hard for him."
"Yes, I'm sure it was,"
Grady says, every muscle in him tightening.
"Do you want to wait outside?"
He seems to be summoning something from deep within himself.
"No,"
he says, jaw set. He shimmies the stack out so he can see the labels on the one stacked behind it. And that's how they go through the room, with Grady pushing, restacking, and shifting boxes until he finds ones to open. Amelia's not sure if his picks are because something on the label has him thinking the ice cream maker might be inside, or if something she can't account for piques his curiosity. Whenever it happens, though, she makes sure to turn her back to him to allow him that little bit of privacy. She only opens one box herself, one marked serving pieces. Inside is a sterling silver tea set, each tarnished piece cloaked in dark felt. It takes only 15 minutes before Grady finds the ice cream maker in a box labeled Antiques 3. It's a heavy wooden bucket with a cap that is clamped on. A white crank handle is attached to the top, and though the mechanisms are likely old, they still spin with ease. Grady gives it a shake. Inside, they hear papers fluttering around. He holds on to the base while Amelia unscrews the cap. At the bottom, they find a wedding card. "Dear Pat and Diana, I hope you'll forgive a spinster for sharing some unsolicited advice on your wedding day, but this saying, a favorite of my father's, has proven itself true for me time and time again. The fruits of hard work are sweeter than the sweetest of nectars. Though life may not always be easy, it still can be plenty sweet. With love, Aunt Molly." Folded up in the card is one oversaturated paper photocopy, the contrast turned up so high that every wrinkle and fold on the original casts a deep shadow on its duplicate, just like the ancient photocopier at the Sand Lake Public Library, Amelia thinks. Four index cards have been copied onto the page, with Molly's handwritten ingredient amounts for her commercial machine. Not that it says so explicitly, but Amelia can tell by the measurements, which Molly has annotated in pencil, sizing them down for the hand-cranked ice cream maker. Where are those cards? Still in the house somewhere? How could they have missed them? There are no step-by-step instructions.
That's okay, though, because Amelia's played around with the machine and read enough other recipes to know. She can see exactly how her experiments fell short. In Molly's vanilla, she used less white sugar and more of the barley syrup the vanilla beans are soaked in, which Amelia thought was used only to preserve them. Amelia came closest with the proportions of the chocolate, though she never allowed it to cure for the correct amount of time in the batch chiller. Amelia's attempts at strawberry were way off. Her heart catches when she sees the card for Home Sweet Home. Wild honeysuckle flowers, at least 3 handfuls, steeped overnight in cream. And it's as if the secret is now in her mouth, making immediate and absolute sense. Sweet, floral, like honey, but milder. All the honeysuckle growing wild in the old cow pastures. It's the taste of home. Amelia feels euphoric, but Grady is somewhere on the other end of the spectrum. It's as if all the adrenaline that propelled him this far tonight has burned off, run dry. He leans against a stack of boxes and gives a deep exhale. She steps closer to him, puts her hand on his arm. Do you want to stay a while? Look through? He closes the boxes and begins to stack them back up carefully. Amelia helps.
I could just leave it a mess. He'd never know I came in here, he says.
But he continues to straighten them anyway. If you told him, would he be mad?
I honestly don't care.
She's not sure what she prefers, Grady's desperate need for his dad's affection, or this sudden icy detachment. Hopefully the latter is just temporary, a response to emotions being so raw. Amelia would hate to think she played any role in breaking a family apart. Grady shuts the door to the room, turns off the lights in the house. Amelia slips her shoes back on at the door. He must have so much going through his mind right now, but he doesn't share any of it. Grady slides from one lane to the other and back again. Whichever lane they pick goes slower than the other. Holiday traffic. He lays on the horn. It's a little after 8 o'clock, and they are barely halfway to Sand Lake. Amelia's phone battery is almost gone. She tries sending a text to Kate, letting her know they're on their way back, but stuck in traffic. It dies in the middle. Grady fiddles with the dial. Nothing comes in super clear on the old Cadillac radio, and the scratchiness gives the music a sort of faraway sound. Amelia tells herself not to fall asleep. Falling asleep is the worst thing you can do to a driver on a long road trip.
Amelia.
She is curled up next to him. She sits up, slides over to her side of the front seat. They are finally back in Sand Lake. It's nearing midnight. Oh no, Amelia says, breathless.
Where do you want me to drop you off?
Grady asks. She shows him the way. The headlights shine in the trees, the car rocking over the sandy path, evergreen branches scraping at the sides. Amelia keeps waiting to see the back bumper of a parked car, Kate's truck or one of the other girls. But it stretches, empty, all the way to the water. Amelia climbs out. She can see where they built the fire. It's died out, just a pile of ash. The sand is smoothed from blankets, and there are shreds of colorful papers from fireworks lit and exploded. Grady's out of the car. He shoves his hands in his pockets.
I'm sorry. I drove as fast as I could.
I know you did. Amelia presses her lips together. This isn't Grady's fault. Amelia made the choice to go with him. She will have to deal with the consequences.
Should I take you home?
Amelia nods. But I need to make a quick stop first. Grady parks the Cadillac, but leaves it running, headlights on. Together, in the bright beams, they pull honeysuckle flowers off the bushes. Amelia holds out the hem of her shirt and they fill it like a basket.
How much do you need?
3 handfuls. The smell is intoxicating, wafting up